Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back. I'm Carl Mack and this is Combat Chronicles. Going to be brisk today because I've got a lot on stuff that I'm working on for the Patreon. Also, not a huge amount to talk about in terms of real interesting stuff. Bit of boxing, bit of MMA. Somewhat of a depressing weekend as well this weekend, but unlike last week's episode, I'm going to try my best to temper sort of how morose I sounded. Listening back and editing that, I was like, fuck me, this is a depressing little episode. But unfortunately, I will start off with the depressing news of the third fight between Saul Alvarez Canelo and Gennady Golovkin being somewhat of a dud, but also just sad to watch. I expected this. I anticipated this. I've been saying it since the fight was made. So I'm not an after-timer by any means. But Gennady Golovkin is not ready at this stage of his career to be fighting someone like Canelo. He's not being able to pull the trigger like he used to. He's more easily flustered. He is easier to back up. And he always was willing to concede ground in fights and then bide his time. But he concedes ground now in a way that is not conducive to him consistently winning rounds. And I was not surprised how he looked. I was surprised he looked this kind of decent. That's not fair. Decent is not the right word. He was just flat rather than bad. I think that's the best way of putting it. And Canelo, this is what's surprising for me. Canelo looked flat. Canelo looked sort of not interested, going through the motions, much like he did when he was cut into 154 back in the day. He had to take a lot of time off, rounds off. He looked like that in this fight, and actually this fight ended up devolving into a really kind of messy fight as it went on. Not much action to rhyme about. The famous luminaries in the crowd, which DAZN kept showing us, must have thought, fuck me, this was crap. They were really trying to hype and sell this as a big fight all week, and I didn't think anyone seemed to care. No one seemed to care. It didn't feel like a big fight. I think boxing fans are often dumb, but in this instance, I think everyone seemed to sort of have a good grasp on this fight not being on level with their first two. First one was a fantastic fight with some great moments and lots of controversy. Will almost certainly go down as a classic bout of the era. The second fight for me literally was a classic, an all-time two-way technical classic, and one of the best fights of the era. So yeah, I will remember this rivalry for those fights. As I say, the first one will go down, and pretty much has already gone down, as a sort of Hagler-Leonard-esque all-time controversial title fight. Interesting parallels as well with the long weight, middleweight title fight, etc. It already seems to have entered the pantheon, is what I'm trying to say. It's an all-time great controversial decision. But it's nice to see this week that some people have taken it upon themselves to rewatch that fight and can see if what it is, a really close nip and tuck affair with some real swing rounds. And the only thing that's really controversial was the all-time bad Adelaide Bird scorecard. Speaking of which, two things. First and foremost, I had a dream last night. No one likes to hear about dreams, but oftentimes with fights, if I don't stay up for them, and I certainly wasn't going to stay away for Golovkin Canelo 3, I dream that I'm in bed and that I roll over and check boxing scene on my phone, which is weird. It's a very specific thing which has been happening to me for years, really. I roll over, I read boxing scene in bed and see what the result was and go back to bed. And I read a result that Golovkin had put on a masterclass boxing display, which even in my dream didn't really seem real. But what they did was they read out the first two scorecards, and then they called Adelaide Bird in the ring to read her scorecard, and it was like a pro wrestling moment. And she read 120-108 Golovkin, and everyone cheered, and it was an amazing moment. And obviously, when I woke up for real, I realised that that had not happened. And when I watched the fight, it was certainly not on the DAZN pay-per-view. I think in America it was extortionately expensive, and over here, if you're a subscriber, you got it for like an extra £10 or something. I was not going to do that because A, I'm not a subscriber, and B, I wasn't going to pay for this fight. I got to watch it on the much lauded fan cam, which I often purport the sort of the greatness of, or the benefits of. And unfortunately, A, the fight wasn't very good, but B, the crowd was somewhat obnoxious. People shouting out Triple G Kazakhstan, and people telling them to shut up. One guy called, I think at one point someone called Golovkin Trip for sure, which Gennady, yeah, sure, Triple G, sure, G even, Trip, yeah, not for me. But I didn't miss much because the fight wasn't very good. Sticking on what I said about the Adelaide Bird thing, the scorecards for this were horrendous. That was the second part of the point I wanted to make. Awful, awful, awful scorecards. Maybe gave Golovkin one or two rounds. Wasn't really scoring it myself. Didn't really seem to be any need to. But what does this actually mean for Canelo? Going forward is what I'm trying to get at here. And the thing with Canelo is, I'm pretty sure he's still capable of more than this. Maybe he felt Golovkin didn't feel too strong early, and just, you know, went through the motions. Maybe, you know, he hasn't been, he thought this was going to be a bit of an easier fight, so maybe he hasn't trained as hard, even though, you know, we know he's a demon in the gym. But if he's cut corners, maybe he just knows he hasn't got a full 36 minutes in him. And because for a fighter, and Golovkin clearly appeared to be a fighter that is not really on the level with some of the guys Canelo has fought recently, not in terms of ambition, prime athleticism, etc., Canelo seemed to be off rhythm. He did not seem to be as sharp as he has in other fights, even in the Bivol fight, in which he was largely nullified for parts of the contest. He still appeared sharp, still appeared capable of going through the gears, trying to up the pressure, trying different things. In this, looked like sparring at times. So, has the Bivol fight taken something out of Canelo mentally? Or did it take something out of him physically? Has that sort of unwavering confidence he had when he was on that long undefeated run, you know, Bivol breaking that, shattering that myth, has it made Canelo somewhat cautious? Was it just an off night? Was it just him happy to get back in the win column? Not sure. It's the kind of thing now where going forward, Canelo was always such a reliable performer, and now we really do need to see another fight from him to figure out where he's at, what's going on. And interesting. A spanner in the works that I wasn't expecting. So we could have a massive shift in the sort of pound-for-pound landscape sometime soon. Usyk, you know, he's going to be like 35, 36 soon. Probably going into the last sort of the home stretch of his own career. Canelo is what, 34? 33? Either way, not everyone is able to go on at a high level into their 40s. Well, I'm sure Canelo could. I mean, I'm just talking about, you know, top pound-for-pound operator as he was. He's been fighting a very long time. You know, we're coming up to, in a couple of years' time, he would have had a 20-year pro career. You know, it's crazy. Wasn't the Mayweather fight already like a fucking decade ago? He was really young then. But, you know, he has had a full career. The idea that Canelo is just going to continue his march on this sort of uninterrupted prime, well, that's clearly not the case now anyway. But the fact that, oh, Bivol's a bad night, bad style, he'll get back on the horse. I don't think he should rematch Bivol. I don't think he's got it in him to overcome that sort of stylistic challenge. You can see why he didn't want to fight Beterbiev. I think what's interesting is narratively, I think people said, well, if you think he was picking an easy fight with an undefeated champion in Bivol, I don't know what you were watching. He was picking the easier fight. Not an easy fight, sure, but an easier fight. And given, and this is what I said about the Bivol Canelo fight when it happened, we saw things from Bivol that we hadn't really seen consistently over 12 rounds. If you'd watched his previous title fights, there was clearly an avenue to beating him or an avenue to see that he was not the full ticket, really. He had things that he did well that he was not able to put together consistently. He had moments he had lapses in concentration, took rounds off, and you would think, yeah, I could see why Canelo would want this fight. When he put it all together, suddenly you go, fuck me, yeah, that's a fighter that is tailor-made to beat Canelo. Didn't look like that going into it. Some guys, very rare few, said, you know what, I'm willing to go out on a limb and say, I think Bivol fights to the level of his opposition and can put it all together. I'm very rarely willing to make those sort of concessions. I like to go with what I've seen and the evidence, and had not seen it from Bivol. I was proven wrong. I'm absolutely fine with that. I'll continue to go with evidence-based analysis. And the evidence on Canelo is I need to see a bit more from him, because I'm not really sure where he's at right now. Not based on, you know, I'm not just what I'm willing. Not what I'm not willing to say is he treated Golovkin with too much reverence. I think he would have been very happy to have been the first person to stop Golovkin if he could have done, regardless of the respect. So, speaking of Golovkin, looks to be the end of his career. Let's just talk quickly about what I think his legacy is, and some of the things that have been said about him over the years. I remember Douglas Fisher of The Ring saying that, you know, he's one of the greatest middleweight champions of all time. He's close to either equaling or bettering Carlos Monzon's title defence record, etc., etc. It's all baloney. Never won the legitimate middleweight championship, the lineal championship, of which the lineage was unbroken for a long time, encompassing some fantastic champions. So don't tell me. Yes, he was avoided. That's a fact. That shit happens. Harry Greb was avoided, but his middleweight title reign really started when he fought Johnny Wilson. Okay, that's a fact. We can't give, you know, treat people differently. Golovkin probably would have won the title, and he definitely would have won the title if he'd fought the same Sergio Martinez that Martin Murray fought, or if he'd got to Miguel Cotto before Canelo did. That's a fact. Okay, but it didn't happen, so I can't give him credit for it. Should he have won the lineal championship in the first fight with Canelo? As I say, it's a pick'em, but that certainly showed that he was tit for tat with the number one middleweight in the world. So yes, Golovkin was clearly an elite operator. But in terms of legacy, middleweight legacy, that's important to define this conversation as middleweight legacy. Okay? A very deep division historically, with lots of great champions. Golovkin would not scratch my top 50, I don't imagine. In terms of head-to-head, clearly a fantastic fighter. Lots of great tricks in his bag. Fantastic jab. Massive concussive puncher with both hands. And if he retires now, which I hope he does, Golovkin will go down as one of the great iron men in the history of boxing. Surely one of the toughest, most durable fighters we've ever seen. And in 10, 15 years' time, hey, probably in 10 days' time, and probably already, if you were to ask someone to draw up a list of the greatest chins of all time, Gennady Golovkin would clearly be on that list. So he has a legacy, absolutely. Will be remembered fondly, I'm sure. All-time great, not for me. One young boxer who's getting a lot of plaudits right now and building his own legacy is Bam Rodriguez. And I woke up this morning and saw that he'd been getting a lot of stick online. At the end of the day, he's fought three times this year now. Israel Gonzalez, his opponent, is seasoned. He's fought many top caliber opponents. I have no idea why everyone's giving Rodriguez stick. A competitive fight in which he pulled out some dirty tactics, whatever. I'd like to see a bit of seasoning from a young, early 20s kid. Fought not in his usual way. Seemed to be going through the motions. Heard the commentary on DAZN say that, and I did watch the DAZN broadcast for this one, say that basically he didn't really want the fight. He wanted to sort of see out the year. I imagine he's got his eyes on the Chocolatito Estrada rubber match. You can bet your bottom dollar that he will be front and centre, ringside, for that one. It's one of the few big fights DAZN has got to make. A, that rubber match, and B, Bam versus the winner. So, yeah, things are still looking up for him. Sort of a lot of high guard, forward motion work from him. Just sort of, I guess, going for the motions. Israel Gonzalez just completely fought out of his skin, was able to pressure Rodriguez a lot. What's interesting is I kind of thought that Bam Rodriguez is on this trajectory of what we've seen a lot of times, which is young fighter comes through the ranks, all the veterans are taking years off each other, and then he just carves through them. Watching this fight, there is clearly an avenue for Gonzalez, Roman Gonzalez, that is, Chocolatito, to defeat him. There's clearly an avenue for Estrada to be too canny for him. So that also, this fight in a way makes that more interesting for me. It makes it more interesting because now I don't just think he's going to cut through these guys and just be too quick of hand and foot for him, as so many younger fighters are for battle-worn and battle-tested veterans. But this was a relatively mediocre performance from Bam. I'm not saying it wasn't, but it's kind of, saying that he's now being exposed, all that sort of stuff. It's fine. He had a competitive fight. It happens against a guy who's fought, actually, if you think about it, he's fought higher level opposition than Bam has throughout his career, really. Do you know what I mean? So, seasoned guy, fought in a couple of title fights. Bam has kind of had a meteoric ascension through the ranks. Shot probably shouldn't have even be at 115. I've made this case before. He was on my list of hot prospects for £108. Took a fight with Carlos Quadras at late notice. Won a vacant WBC or whatever it was. And is now plying his trade there. And has put forth some really good performances. Beat Strisket, saw Rungvisa in really impressive fashion. That wasn't even very long ago. What was that? 3 months ago? 3 months. Not even 3 months ago. So to write the kid off, come on now, are we going to forget the impressive stuff we've seen from him so far this year? If nothing else, it wasn't his best performance, but it showed us he can win fighting in a different kind of way. Do you know what I mean? This was quite pretty rote work from him, in my opinion. Not his best stuff, but he won, in my opinion, by a couple of rounds. Whatever. We got to see him again. He's fought three times this year against fighters that, if you follow these weight classes, you will know all of them. And hasn't been dropped, hasn't been badly hurt. This one was just more workmanlike from him. So it's obvious going to be, next May, he's going to be fighting the winner of Gonzalez and Estrada 3. So something to look forward to, and not writing him off by any means. As I say, fleeting visit of the day. Not going to go too much into the UFC. I'm just going to look at Song Yadong versus Corey Sandhagen. But before I do, obviously an important pivotal fight at bantamweight. If you want to hear about other brilliant bantamweights from the past, be sure to sign up to the Patreon, www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. Still working on it. We've got a little audio documentary coming out about Miguel Torres, fantastic WEC champion, and in my opinion, the first great bantamweight. So that's coming soon. And in October, of course, you're going to get the scans of the Pride material, the on-site program, and the first edition of the Guide to Pride. This is probably the biggest undertaking I've ever done in my full career of combat punditry, be it magazine articles, online stuff, podcasts, whatever. The Guide to Pride 1 is going to be the biggest thing I've ever undertaken. Still not finished because I am waiting on Japanese materials to be translated, which I've paid for out of my own pocket. So essentially, the Patreon at the moment is a loss. So if you can tell your friends, that they might enjoy the content. Get them to sign up for the Guide to Pride for next month, or this Miguel Torres documentary. I can start to sort of reaccumulate the money I've spent to make this episode so good for you guys, because I think it's going to be really fun. And hopefully we'll shed a light on the early goings of Pride, and in some ways the early goings of MMA, in a way that maybe a lot of Western media hasn't necessarily touched before. So look forward to that. So UFC Fight Night, Sanhagen versus Song, September 17th, last night as of recording. I know people are going to say, give us a full card rundown. There's loads on there that was interesting. Watch Robocop's fight, obviously. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. I know there's a lot of you young kids out there that find, you know, Loma Look With Me and Julian Robertson and, I don't know. I guess I'd like Andre Feely, and I like those guys. I'm not saying I don't like them. But there are other people out there doing fight-by-fight rundowns of cards that were willing to talk about them. In terms of big narratives and interesting stuff to talk about in terms of storylines, there's just not really much there. Obviously, heart goes out to Loma Look With Me for her post-fight comments about how she's struggling. That's horrendous, you know, to hear that she's going through that, and so brave that she'd be willing to come out. But yeah, you know, these guys do some interesting things in the cage, but generally, you know, sort of from a title fight standpoint, or just from a sort of future fight standpoint, not really much going on interesting there, or nothing new. That's the way to put it. It's not really anything for me to really talk about. And the heavy stuff about, you know, obviously mental health issues, I've spoken out before on my Twitter and stuff about that kind of thing. I told you last week was a really morose episode. Don't really want to get bogged down on it here. I'm sure other people will. Other podcasts are available. But the fight I do want to talk about, Corey Sanhagen versus Song Yadong. Violence weight is often being seen as sort of 155 to 170. And Sanhagen isn't really a massively concussive striker. But I think we have to... I'll start campaigning Kaposa, because I think Corey Sanhagen is clearly one of the most violent people in the sport, and Song Yadong is as well. So made for a fun fight, somewhat one-sided affair. I thought it was unfair on Corey anyway to have to be fighting down the rankings, because he's a quality fighter, and there's plenty of quality fights at 135. Seems that kind of they've got this kind of thing where 135 is so stacked at the moment. They kind of put like Piotr Jan against Sean O'Malley, Sanhagen versus Song Yadong. It's kind of like, right, let's see. It's almost like crossroads fights in a way. You know, are these prospects ready to go? Are these going to be our next title challengers? Or are these guys that are already up there, are they still the next guys in line? And UFC's kind of trying to inject new blood. Bit too fast and bit too soon, in my opinion. Certainly with Piotr Jan and Sean O'Malley, I'm anticipating a massacre. That would be no surprise to anyone. I'm sure everyone's going to be thinking exactly the same way. I'm no visionary for that. But Song Yadong does some excellent stuff. You know, physically, he's just got it all. He's ludicrously durable. He's just such a tough kid. He's still young, really fast. Just seems like a pretty good athlete, really. No surprise that he's working at Team Alpha Male. They've always been sort of athletes first that have then put sort of nuts and bolts onto their game and sort of tried to build a sort of functional all-round game off of that. You know, he's more of a sort of power striker in that regard. Not really seeing the fruits of his labour in terms of working with a team that are well-known submission threats. Not really seen that yet. I'd like to see that. In my opinion, still not a great wrestler, but very good at sort of anti-wrestling, like that aspect from him. Corey Sanhagen, though, just sort of knew how to put him in his box. Not without peril, because he was clipped a couple of times and seemed visibly rocked on one of them, but he's a durable guy, Sanhagen, and great powers of recovery, as we know. But what he did was, he was able to anticipate Yadong's forward movement, catch him, and then step out either side, keep him turning, keep him following, negate his pressure fighting ability, and also give him less opportunities to counter. And then what he'd do is, he'd lean on him against the cage, didn't have any success or anything, but just put him back in his box, stop him exploding, stop him trying to find opportunities for his counter shots. And just basically with Song Yadong, you've got to limit the amount of times you're stood in front of him and limit the amount of time you give him to counter you. If you just crack him and get out, Kyla Phillips did this to an extent as well. If you just sort of crack him and get out, don't have prolonged exchanges with him, you basically just nullify what he's his physical attributes, which, as I say, really fast trigger, able to sort of bang it out in the pocket because he's just so durable. And yeah, just like, you know, he is just ludicrously powerful, it seems. So I think Corey Sandhagen fought really well. It was pretty much one-sided, but what I liked about it, and I do want to touch on it, because Corey didn't really show us anything really new. He's as good as we thought. As I said, this is the kind of matchup it was. Is he as good as we thought, or is this new guy going to be the one to take a spot in the rankings and really freshen up the top five of 135 in a division that's really deep and you just don't know what's going to happen? So Corey, he did his thing. But what I liked about Song Yadong is he's absolutely destroyed facially. There's blood everywhere, right? He should be easily demoralised. Even in the fourth round when he can barely see, I saw him sort of using reflexive head movement to slip four or five shots in a row. And I thought, yeah, this kid's got it. This is a learning fight. This is a fight in which he loses no credit for, because I say he's fighting up in the rankings. Valiant effort. Had his moments. Few and far between, admittedly. And I think, you know, essentially he got outsmarted and outfought by someone who's just way more experienced than he is, and has physical advantages himself. He's a long boy. I think that's one thing that Song really didn't manage to do too much of, which is body attacking. As I say, I think he was sort of his fast trigger was sort of put off somewhat by the fact that Sandhagen was in and out, left and right, and then was able to nullify him in grappling moments. But there's nothing to lose credit from in this fight for Song Yadong. I think he's shown that he's really close to that level. And it could have been, if it wasn't Corey, there might have been another top five bantamweight he was able to beat. Certainly not Marlon Vera, though, if you remember that one. But fun fight. Not a great fight by any means. But, you know, an interesting fight for sure. And well worth a watch. Last week I did a kind of watch now, watch later for completionists only. The most of this card is for completionists only. But for Corey Sandhagen versus Song Yadong, as soon as this podcast is over, if you haven't watched it, just stop what you're doing and watch it immediately, because it was a really, really intriguing fight between two guys who, in my opinion, one of them's definitely elite in Sandhagen. I don't think he's... I'm still sat on the fence in regards to his title aspirations at 135. I do think there's a cup. The two best guys in the division are clearly above him. He's lost to both of them, clearly, in my opinion. I still will never understand why people thought the... I understand why people loved the fight with Piotr Jan, but I never really understand why people thought it was close and competitive. It was like a 4-1 kind of fight. It was competitive throughout, but it was not close. That's the best way of putting it. Fight of the year, it was not. As a hill I'm willing to die on. I know a lot of my mates disagree with me. Hey, look, we've got to have different opinions, and it's fun to have them. And Aljamain Sterling just trounced him. And I'd love to see... That's probably more intriguing, to see if Corey can completely deviate from that first fight, in which he was just grounded, back-taken, finished, easy. It was like one of Aljo's easiest fights against a fighter who should have been... even if you don't think stylistically he should have been challenging, even at that point, Corey was just a dangerous and top quality fighter. So I'm on the fence of his title aspirations, certainly not on the offence, on the fences for him as an elite bantamweight. Probably a lot of divisions he'd be champion and a great one. But as I've said many times before on this podcast, 135 is deep enough in the UFC, but it's just as deep worldwide. A fantastic division, a true golden era for the weight class, maybe the best golden era for any weight class, dare I say it. I really do think the bantamweight is incredible right now. So yeah, I think I'm sure there's been some 155 eras that'll be better, no doubt. But as I said, last week was morose. This week we're going for sort of hyperbolic enthusiasm. And let's end on a high note. And let's end on the note of the incredible music which ends it, which I'm sure people love to hear from Vale Tudo, 95. What an event. And that will be featuring again in the Guide to Pride, as I sort of tried to tell the tale of Hicks and Gracie versus Takada. A fight which is really interesting that I'm writing so much on, because it's essentially a squash match between a legit pound-for-pound fighter and a pro wrestler. If that doesn't whet your appetite for the Guide to Pride 1, I don't know what will. Head on over to www.patreon.com/combatchronicles, and of course you get access to all the other stuff I've already done on there. But I hope you can see I'm trying to get better on this in terms of production values, in terms of topics, in terms of delivery. I hope last week's depressing episode sort of didn't put you off. I guess it didn't, because you're listening to this. So hope you enjoyed this one. As I say, only brief, because I've got shit to do. Speak to you soon. Will there be a free episode next week? I really don't know. Sign up to the Patreon. You'll definitely get content. Until that content drops, hit me up on over on Twitter at @combatcr. Post little highlights, little historical things, sort of primary sources from back in the day, things that are interesting to fight fans, little bits of analysis here and there. But you know, I'm just willing to chat. Hit me up. Let's have a talk about fighting. That's what we're all here for. And I don't know if there's going to be a free one next week, as I say, but if you definitely want to hear from me, find me over on Twitter or on Patreon. Take care, have a good week wherever you are, and of course, God save the king. I'm joking, I couldn't give a fuck about that shit.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.